talking about your family tree, your dreams, your agony in life. Now I'm thinking about you all the time. Catch your feelings like it's flu season. If I'm awake at night, then you're probably the reason.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Death is an inevitable part of all life, but also something that not many people feel comfortable discussing. That's understandable. It's something that we can never truly know, and that's a scary concept to contend with. However, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be talked about, and for many, talking more about death can be something that is healing. That is what certain gathering events dubbed death cafes are trying to show. The Death Cafe, as it's structured today, has been around for over a decade, originally hosted by a man named John Underwood in the UK. Since then, variations of the Death Cafe have been hosted all over the world, including right here in Vancouver. Recently, CJSF was made aware of a Death Cafe series being hosted twice a month at different venues around East Vancouver. We wanted to learn more and got in touch with the lead organizer, Ava Quissey. Ava Quissey is a recent SFU graduate of political science and someone who, after speaking with her, clearly loves talking about death. During our conversation, we spoke with Quissey about why she started these Death Cafes, some of the conversations it's created, and how talking about death doesn't have to be so scary. Please take a listen.
My name's Ava. I'm actually also an SFU graduate. But I host Death Cafes in Vancouver, which I've been hosting for about a year now, on and off. And something I'm really passionate about, really interested in conversations around death and grief and community building. So yeah, happy to be here.
What made you start organizing these events in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually took a class at SFU, HUM3, oh man, what's the course code? Okay, I forget, but by Jason Brown, and he taught this class called Death, Disease, and Disaster, something like that. And it was all about like culture's response to tragedy, death being one of those things, like thinking about how cultures understand death and such. And that just like ignited all these themes in my life that I had kind of been suppressing for a long time about anxiety around death and conversations of grief and change and such. So through taking that class, I came across Death Cafes, which I ended up doing as a final project in that class, and just read about it. And I was like, this seems amazing. So I did a Death Cafe with a small group of friends, like six people in my friend's house, and it was just super, super moving and just a really beautiful experience. And I was like, everyone must experience this. So then a little while later I started doing them publicly, and now I do them for anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts are you doing them? Is it, from what I saw online, it looked like you kind of switch venues?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done a few different venues, which has been interesting because depending on the venue, like you can obviously get different people, and it's been interesting to see how it's changed as I've facilitated in different spaces and tried different things. But I've done them at Slice of Life, at East Cafe, at Secret Lantern Society, all based in East Vancouver. And then in the future, I'm hoping to do some outside and do some cool, like, collaborative events. So, especially as the weather gets warmer, to, like, be in an outside space and have these discussions. But yeah.
And what are these discussions? You know, when I saw the premise of a death cafe, is it sort of tailored towards people who have experienced death and are going through a grieving process, or people just wanting to talk about the concept of death in general? How does that work?
Yeah, so the Death Cafe, there is like an actual format, kind of like quote unquote, comes out of England, like 2011. This guy John Underwood, he started this official thing called Death Cafe, which is a place for people to come together and talk about anything related to death and grief. But it has some guidelines in its traditional format of, like, there's no prompts. It's group-led discussion. It's not bereavement counseling. Like, it's a safe space for people to come together and, like, enjoy snacks and connect and just, like, talk about the philosophical and interests or experiences, whatever. But yeah, I mean, every Death Cafe is different, and it morphs to the needs of the community. And definitely, as people host Death Cafes in Vancouver, and I've seen different Death Cafes happen, people play with, you know, those rules. So I definitely have used prompts before and such. But it's really, like, it's for anybody, it's for anything. Yeah, like, I feel like people typically come and talk about experiences with loss. It is typically more oriented towards like a grief sharing kind of style event. But I definitely have people that come in and are just want to talk about funeral planning, especially if they're like a bit older in age. People come in talking about pet loss. People come in talking about, yeah, like theoretical interests or religion. Like, there's so many different things. So, you know, as long as the space is safe and respectful for anybody, then it really can just be anything. Yeah.
Do you think death isn't talked about enough? Do you think that just, you know, I mean, obviously you host these death cafes, but just, yeah, on a societal level, it does feel in a lot of ways like a taboo topic, mm-hmm, something that provides a lot of discomfort for people. And is that part of what these death cafes are trying to quell or combat?
Yeah, that's definitely where this comes out of, right? The Death Cafe is a response to particularly like the global North or North American culture having a very sanitized relationship with death, medicalized relationship with death, and how we've been so separated from traditions and, yeah, I mean, experiences with death culturally. So, and loss, I think, like, just being, I don't know, intimately acknowledging how present loss is in our lives and all the different ways that we experience loss. So the Death Cafe definitely comes as a response to that need and that lack. Yeah, I definitely don't think it's talked about enough. I mean, my whole basis for being interested in this was feeling such anxiety around it when I was a child. And especially as we live in the increasingly like secular and globalized world, especially in North America, which is this crazy combination of traditions and, you know, a new culture and, yeah, navigating all of this. I think a lot of people feel like maybe a little bit lost in the dark in some of these discussions, and especially from the discussions that happen in these events, I think a lot of people feel really alone in their experiences. So I have just, every time there's a Death Cafe, the response is so overwhelming and how connected people feel. And that always just points to how deep the need is. And so, yeah, I think there's always more room to talk about these things for sure. Yeah.
How do you feel like your perspective on death has changed since starting these?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit in a Death Cafe I had the other day, where sometimes I'll vocalize in the Death Cafe, I'm like, oh, people will think that, you know, because I'm in these spaces, yeah, like, what does it mean to always be in a space where you're kind of thinking about death or talking about death with people, you know? But Yeah, I think maybe for a certain time, I almost did it as like a defense mechanism. It's like I had this anxiety and it was like, okay, well, now I know I have to face this anxiety. And maybe by facing it, you know, I can overcome it. But it's not about overcoming it. Like, I think I've really had to come to terms with the fact that, like, I'll always be scared. I'll always have fear, and there's always an unknown, and I can't do anything about that. And that is kind of the essence of the relationship. It's accepting the unknown, and it's accepting that I can't control these things, and making peace with that in my human experience. And so I feel like that's kind of been one of the bigger lessons of just like, I have to face this. And that doesn't mean that I'm more prepared for it. It just means that I'm like facing it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think it's not something that, like, death isn't something you experience and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm better now. Like,
yeah.
I've healed. It's like, totally. It's an ongoing process. And it's just, these spaces are sort of meant to, like, commiserate and come to terms with that process rather than, like, quote-unquote, overcoming it, in
totally.
A sense.
Totally. And it's interesting to see people talk about grief, like, often people will use like kind of like fighting words. It's like to fight my grief, you know, to like overcome my grief. And I don't know, you know, like everyone has their own way of making peace. But I think it is about making peace, you know, like our grief becomes a part of us and it morphs and it changes. And how do we incorporate that into our lives in a real way rather than like pushing it away? It's interesting to see the language that people use around it, how can you prepare yourself for the death of your friends and family? You know, I don't know that it's about being prepared or it's about being ready. You know, these things are supposed to be devastating. Like that is the importance of them, you know, like that's the way it is. But recognizing that devastation in community is so, so, so important. And so, yeah.
What is the mood like at these events? That was something I was curious about, because the way you talk about it, it feels so, I guess for lack of a better term, positive. Mm-hmm. Like you sound very positive when you speak about it. And I'd imagine that these can be kind of heavy at times, but what is just the overall mood and tone of these death cafes, or maybe the tone that you try to convey?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I definitely talk about it and I'm like, my friends are like, oh, how did the last death cafe go? And I'm like, oh, it went so well, you know. But it's like these people are, you know, like we're crying together, and it really reaches such highs and lows in, you know, in positive ways. But it's a full spectrum of emotion, and I always frame it that way going into the space. I always tell people that this is a dynamic space where crying and laughing can, will happen, and like all of those things are okay. Grief and loss and our feelings about death encompass, like, there's so many different ways that they manifest. So to go into an event where we talk about those things and expect to only be sad is just not even a reflection of what it's like to actually experience those emotions, right? So I mean, it definitely has, obviously, it's very sad, slow, heavy moments. Of course, there's a deep and intense sharing, but there's just such a community that's created. And leaving, I feel like I'm hugging strangers, and it's like there's such a beauty in that heartache. And yeah, it's kind of almost indescribable sometimes. That's how it feels for me, at least. I feel so filled up by it. Sometimes I get kind of anxious before the events, and then when I leave, I'm just always so moved, always. Yeah.
Do you find that it's been sort of the same people reattending, or is it always kind of a new crowd wanting to speak on death?
Yeah, there's definitely people that come back for sure, which is awesome. And it's been interesting. Something I've been passionate about is creating more of an intergenerational space, because a lot of the death cafes that I attended before I started hosting publicly were maybe a bit more themed and a bit more oriented towards people that were thinking about end-of-life planning and such, which is super important, of course, or thinking about funeral planning. But I was really curious, especially just from my own experience, to tap into the thoughts and feelings of people more in my age group. So creating the intergenerational space has been really interesting, and in seeing how those conversations, like what conversations have come up, and then seeing like my friends show up and like not tell me about it, or like people that I've kind of met, and realizing, yeah, that there's such a need. Yeah, it's also, yeah, like I said, you know, different spaces, different people. So I'm always kind of surprised sometimes. And it's gotten to a point where I do have people that I know show up and they're not telling me, and I'm just like, okay, this is nice, this is a good thing. But I'm finding new ways to try and get the message out there to new groups, because it's really a space for everybody. Like, I think everybody can benefit from being there. So
yeah, I mean, the intergenerational aspect seems like a pretty important part, because, you know, I'm assuming we're both in our 20s. Mm-hmm. And like, when there are older people attending these events, like, it's kind of a fact of life. Like, once you get to a certain age, like, you are going to have experienced death.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, or like the death of loved ones in your life. So like, having those people there, providing that kind of perspective for people that are younger and maybe haven't had those experiences yet, or had fewer of those experiences, that feels like a very important part.
Totally. And I think it's like, what does it mean to live the width of your life, but also the depth of it? And we, like, it's so easy to make, you know, relationships with people that are on the same kind of time frame as you, like in your circle. But having relationships with people that have more life experience and less, you know, younger and older, there is something so, so essential about that. And yeah, I was reading about this, like, beautiful indigenous perspective about, like, living your life to become a good elder or a good ancestor. And I talked about this a little bit in my Death Cafe on Wednesday. And I think we've become really alienated from that idea. Like, we get really caught up in, like, what's happening right now and how do I live, you know, especially in this youth-obsessed culture, which definitely bleeds into this fear of death and fear of loss and change and aging, you know? What does it mean to have vibrant, healthy, inspiring relationships with people that are older than you, and to, like, have that reciprocal inspiration of, like, life doesn't end yet, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much taboo just around aging. So I think they're all intertwined in my eyes. And yeah, you want to live every moment as fully as possible, and having those relationships and those insights, I think, really plays a big hand in that, for sure.
How can people who want to learn more about the Death Cafes, like, when they're hosted?
Yeah.
Where? How does that work?
The promo.
Yeah.
It's a little bit low key right now, but I do post them on Instagram. That's when I host mine. I host, out of various spots in East Vancouver monthly on my own, and then I co-host with a friend out of Playground Studio. Also trying to do that monthly, but so you can check out Playground Studio, because we posted it on there. And then I have an Instagram called Looking Out Looking In, which is where I just post any of my little death related journey stuff. So I always post on there, and then it's also on Eventbrite usually as well. So yeah, keep an eye out.
Once again, that was our conversation with Ava Quissy, host of a Death Cafe series in East Vancouver. This has been Danny Nesvitarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We are rooted in community support and engagement. Thank you for helping us stay on air.
This is Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. And today I'm here with Kelty Forsyth, Artistic Managing Director of Presentation House Theatre in North Vancouver, to chat about the production Peerless, which will be one of two productions featured at the Ensemble Theatre Festival taking place July 8th to 18th at the Jericho Arts Centre. Kelty, how are you? Like, how are things?
I mean, so busy, but wonderful.
Yeah, I hear some voices in the background. I love it. That's the beauty of community radio. That's so great. So busy times. I am curious if you could share a little bit about Ensemble Theatre Festival, just for people who have never heard about it before. Because I know there was a bit of a hiatus, right?
That's right. So the theater festival started in 2013, and the idea was to bring kind of a little bit more serious fare into the Vancouver summer scene. We love Tuts. We love Bart on the Beach. But the idea was to bring something that's not Shakespeare, that's not musical, that's like for your kind of play lovers, right, into the scene in the summer. And so it's really focused on this work that is based in like really Wonderful texts, right? Works, some of them a little more classical, some of them from the kind of contemporary classical canon, like Streetcar Named Desire that we're playing with, and some of them like Peerless that are much more contemporary, but that's the thing they all have in common. They're all of these like really extraordinary texts that we as artists get an opportunity to like really dig into and sink our teeth into. And so 2013, the Rep Festival started. It ran all the way to 2019. We had a festival, of course, planned for the summer of 2020. And then we were on hiatus for 2 years. We came back in 2022 with a festival and then took another hiatus while we sort of figured out some artistic leadership transitions. So Tarek Leslie started the company and the festival, really wonderful artist, voice actor, actor, director, who was in town. And then after 2022, he decided to step away and he asked Chris Lam and I if we would like to take over the artistic direction of the company. We'd both been artists with the company, Chris as a director and actor, me as a director, and also as people who were kind of part of the ensemble, who helped pick the shows, who provided artistic support, even in the years that we weren't working on the shows themselves. And so it took Chris and I a while to figure out whether we wanted to revive the festival as was or make some changes. And it was actually Chris who came to me just with a really impassioned pitch for the importance of continuing to do this work, both for the audiences who, I will say, would like occasionally just email and be like, where are you guys? Are you coming back? And also for the artists who get so much working with these really wonderful scripts.
Yeah. So you got the questions. Are you coming back? You are back. You are directing the production Peerless. So would you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yes. So Peerless is a modern adaptation of Macbeth by Jae Park, who's a Korean-American playwright. It's from 2015, and it reimagines Macbeth if it were about high school seniors competing for early admission slots to Ivy League universities.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's a lot shorter than Macbeth. It's be about 90 minutes. And it's very, very funny. I think the way the poetry is like held in the language is really, really appealing, while at the same time being a very new and very contemporary thing. And if you saw 2022's Passover with us, I think it shares some kind of artistic DNA with Antoinette Nwandu's Passover in terms of how contemporary poetry is kind of embedded into the text of the show. So it features, instead of Mackers and Lady M, twin girls named M and L, who have moved by themselves to somewhere in the American Midwest in order to try to get to the college, which we all understand, although it's not named as Harvard. Right. And they have done everything they can to manipulate their way into early admission in Harvard. And when they fail, they take it, let's say, as far as Mackers and Lady M take it in their quest for power. And so the show kind of transitions from what I would call a dark comedy into something that's almost got a kind of psychological horror element to it. So lots of wonderful references to Macbeth for those who know the original text, but very contemporary in its aesthetic and style.
Love, love, love that. Now, I mentioned that there is another production. It is a Streetcar Named Desire. And so could you share like how the festival works? Because it's not that you would see Peerless every day, correct?
No, that's right. We alternate shows between A Streetcar Named Desire and Peerless. So we open the festival on June 10th. We have previews the 8th and 9th of Peerless and Streetcar respectively. Then we open the festival officially on June 10th with Peerless. And then the following day will be the opening of Streetcar. And they more or less alternate dates until the following weekend, until the 19th, when we close with a 2 o'clock matinee of Peerless. And so you get an opportunity to see very contemporary work and then something from the kind of 20th century classical canon as well.
Love it. And what are you most excited about the festival this year?
I'm just so excited to share Peerless with people. I have to say, I'm very excited to see Chris and everyone's work in Streetcar as well. I was in for auditions. I know how capable and talented that cast is, but I really haven't had anything to do with that show now.
Right.
So I'm so excited to see from audition to opening night how it grows. But most of all, I'm just so excited to share Peerless. This is a show where, like, I know who in my life is going to love which jokes. And I'm now at the point where when the artists, like when the actors are running the script, I'm like, oh, that person is going to howl at that, you know?
I love it.
So I'm just so excited to share it. Cause it's a fun little twisted, dark piece of theater in like a really joyful way. And, yeah. And so I'm just excited for audiences together to get to see it.
Love that. And for people who haven't been to the festival before, I would say, I guess they should go to the website to kind of get more information and stuff.
Absolutely. All of the information, including all the showtimes for the individual shows, is available at ensembletheatercompany.ca. Or available on our socials as well, on Instagram at @WeAreETC and at Ensemble Theatre on Facebook. And so you can go there to purchase tickets, find out when the shows are, read the cast and crew bios if you're very excited, sign up for our newsletter, all of the ways that you can stay informed.
And has it always been at the Jericho Arts Center?
We did 1 year at the Waterfront Theater, but otherwise we've been at the Jericho Arts Center, and we're really happy to be back there. That's really a community that's embraced the festival and is thrilled that we're back and they don't have to deal with parking on Granville Island. And given that it's FIFA, we're also really thrilled not to be dealing with parking on Granville
Island. You see, that's pertinent information, guys. Pertinent information. Before I let you go, is there anything that you want to share that maybe was missed?
I think the only thing is just that we also have a little bit of an ancillary performance for each of our Sunday matinees. Okay. So at 11 a.m., you can come to the Jericho Arts Center and see either Fistful of Crime Improv or the musician Violet Grace, depending on which show you're going to see. Pack a little lunch, pack a little picnic, come see the show at 11, go away, have your picnic in the park, eat your lunch, and then come back and see the matinee. And those are all pay what you can. So you can get tickets on our website as well. And they're pay what you can tickets.
Love, love, love that. And if anybody wanted to sort of get connected with you and some of the things that you might be doing even outside of this, are you online in the online streets?